prison inmates have a lot of time to think. Some offenders take comfort in their faith. For others, it's a time to explore a new belief system. Today, spirituality behind bars. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our series on corrections in Iowa with an exploration of spirituality in prison. We'll find out what the Department of Corrections does to meet the spiritual needs of inmates. We'll hear stories from those who have lived and worked in Iowa prisons. A former inmate will tell us the story of her spiritual journey. I'll also talk with a pastor, a rabbi, an imam, and a Native American spiritual guide. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our series on corrections in Iowa with an exploration of spirituality in prison. This hour, I'll talk with a former inmate about her spiritual journey while in prison. I'll also talk with religious leaders of a number of different faiths about the work they do in Iowa prisons, including a pastor, an imam, a Native American cultural and spiritual guide, and also a rabbi. My first guest today spent 6 years as the statewide religious coordinator for the Iowa Department of Corrections. That's a position that the DOC no longer has. Before filling that role, Kay Kopatich worked as a chaplain for 17 years in the corrections system. Hello, Kay.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you help us understand a little bit what the Department of Corrections is required to do to meet the spiritual needs or allow people who are in prison to practice their faith?
Well, they have a right to religion in our country. And it also is a positive influence with people who come into prison. So it's a good practice for the Department of Corrections to meet the needs as best they can of the people who come in.
Now, the majority of prison inmates in Iowa who declare a religious affiliation are Christian, but can you give us an idea of how diverse the population is?
Well, over the years, as our population has grown, we've had more requests for religions. We have Muslims and Jews and some Hindus and certainly Native American. And the pagan religions, such as Wicca and Druidism and others. So we're more diverse by far now.
With the pagan religions that you mentioned, is there, in the Department of Corrections, is there as much of a need to facilitate those religions? Some people consider that to be very fringe.
When there's the request for that, then we investigate to see that it is a legitimate religion. And it was my intention, my focus to help them to practice the faith that they declare and that they believe in.
There are some people who declare that their faith is as a Satanist. Is that something else that the Department of Corrections needs to respect?
We've had requests for Satanism from one particular prison. It's a very small number. I'm not sure right now if anyone is practicing it. But after investigating there is Satanism, they made a strong request, and so at one time it was established. I'm not sure that anyone's practicing it at this time.
So when someone makes a request, what kinds of things does the DOC need to do to make sure that they are allowing that person to exercise their rights?
First thing that I would do as religious coordinator is to do a research to see, first of all, is this a valid religion, an established religion? And so that would be the first criteria. And I would find an expert somewhere who could give me an idea of what would be the important aspects of that faith tradition. Then another consideration would be staffing. How much time does the chaplain have, or a correctional officer, or volunteers come in? And funding, of course, would come into play. as a prison chaplain, I didn't have a budget for my religious articles. We depended mostly on donations.
And the Department of Corrections actually pays an imam right now and pays a Native American consultant. Most of the Christian religious leaders who come into the prisons are volunteer. Why is there that discrepancy?
I'm not sure that I can give you the exact historical reasons that they hired those two, but we do have paid chaplains. And when I was the coordinator 5 years ago, we had about seven or eight chaplains so that were paid by the state, and so we would be there to coordinate. We don't have an imam in every prison, so the imam that we have on contract would serve all of Iowa, as well as our Native American consultant would serve all of Iowa as well.
All right. When you were working at the Iowa Correctional Institute for Women in Mitchellville, you helped to coordinate the building of a Native American sweat lodge on the grounds there. Can you tell me how that came about?
Well, I noticed that there were Native Americans on campus, and they didn't have any communal way of celebrating their traditions. So I just gathered them, asked them if they wanted to have a circle, and they began to talk about their particular traditions. There were probably four different tribes that were in the beginning represented. And so then I began to look for a Native American person who could be their elder, their consultant, and which we eventually did. And a sweat lodge is a common way of practice, that is a common practice in many of the Native American traditions. So the Native American consultant, I accompanied him out in the woods, and we cut down some willows, brought them back to the prison and the women, and then we found a canvas at a, I think it was Army Surplus. But we just did with what we had, and the Native American women built the lodge inside the prison there.
Was it hard to get permission to do that?
It took a while. We need to, first of all, check with the Native American authorities. Is this essential to their religion? And there's a lot of components to a sweat lodge that could be considered contraband or dangerous. So we did a lot of research, and the women themselves and the men in prison proved themselves to be trustworthy and that they will take this seriously and follow the rules.
I think one of the things that sort of captures the public imagination about spirituality in prison is the idea of people experiencing religious conversions or having a religious epiphany when they're in prison. We're also talking about a captive population, of course. Are volunteers allowed to come in and minister to people and witness to people who are not already of their faith?
Yes, of course. We depend very much on volunteers. Religious volunteers are backbone of our religious programs. And they are allowed to come in and into the chapel. Women then have the choice if they want to come to that service. They can. They certainly don't have to. We very closely follow the separation of church and state in that respect. So they're not really captive audiences. They choose to come to the chapel for that particular event.
All right. And I want to bring Chris on the line at 866-780-9100 into the conversation. Hello, Chris.
Hi there.
Hi. And you actually work as a spiritual leader in some prisons?
I'm part of a religious community. I'm a practicing pagan and a member of the clergy, so to speak. And I just wanted to commend the speaker for recognizing all religions, regardless of how they're seen by the larger society. And I'd also, my one question I thought of is, if someone did want to donate materials for people, for example, for practicing pagans, for example, who are incarcerated, how would one go about doing that?
Okay, Kay, could you understand that he is a practicing pagan and works with some people in prisons, and he's wondering if people wanted to volunteer and contribute things to help people who are practicing pagans in prisons, how would they go about it?
Well, I'm happy to hear that he's helping the prisons. and simply talk with the chaplain or the treatment director, whoever you're working with, to come into the prison to tell them of the items you want to or the money that you want to donate. And they'd be very, very willing, very happy to hear that.
What do you think it's important for the public to understand about religious services and spirituality behind bars?
First, to understand that these are people in prison. They're not bad to people. They're not monsters. These are people that could be your brothers or sisters or mothers or fathers. And most of them come out of prison, and they come back to our communities. And so if we want to give the very best experience to help them improve their lives, make the transformations that will help them to make it on the outside. Religion is and spirituality is a very important component of that. It gives them roots. It gives them an anchor to make the courageous changes that they need to.
Do you think that there are misconceptions about prisoners that people have that lead them to think this is a ruse, or, you know, as some people say, that people use their religious faith or even a professed religious faith to lessen the time they spent in prison and look as if they're behaving better?
I never worried about jailhouse conversions. Whatever reason they came to the chapel or come for my services, I think it is positive, and they always gain something from coming to the services or professing. I don't know that it would really do much for them in shortening their sentences because they come to church. I don't know that that would be a danger at all.
With the Department of Corrections investing money in some of these religious facilities and services, that kind of thing, were there ever conflicts of interest with the separation of church and state? Is that something that was a regular conversation?
Well, there was a time in one of the prisons, a religious group was involved in a program there, and there was a lawsuit concerning that. And so we do have to be careful that if you're coming into a program that is religious-based, that at that time you're not a captive audience, so to speak, that it isn't required, that religion isn't required for you to be able to pass through that or graduate from that program.
All right. Kay, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Kay Kopatich worked as a chaplain in the Department of Corrections for 17 years. She also spent 6 years as the statewide religious coordinator for the Iowa Department of Corrections. That's a position that the DOC no longer has. In a moment, I'm going to talk to a former inmate about her spiritual journey while she was behind bars. And I'll also talk to representatives from a number of different faiths about the work that they do in prisons. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're continuing our series on corrections in Iowa with a conversation about spirituality in prison. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll talk to a former inmate about her spiritual journey while in prison. And also for the rest of the hour, I'll be talking with spiritual leaders from a number of different faiths. And we're going to start with Ed Bateman. He is a retired pastor. He's now 81 years old and has been volunteering at the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale for 15 years. Ed, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And what made you want to volunteer in prison?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I was made, but it became a great impression on my heart after I retired to consider working with men that I realized by the grace of God I wasn't in prison with them. And I started visiting the Oakdale facility as associate pastor in one of the local churches here. And I began to share with them in my own life some of my experience as they shared theirs. And it just became a fit that I felt very strongly this is where the Lord wanted to spend the rest of my active life.
I know that the work that you've been doing at Oakdale has changed over the years, as you have changed a little bit over the years. Yeah. But can you give me an idea of some of the things that you learned when you first started volunteering there that surprised you?
I guess the great surprise was revealing my own heart. As I began to talk to men, I began to realize by the, as I say again, the grace of God, I wasn't there with them. And I saw God working in my heart and my own life, and he gave me a great burden for these men. I have a simple theology that I believe all men are in need of a redeemer, but all men are not as bad as they could be. Someone has said, all men are bad, but not all men are as bad off as they could be. So it was that mentality.
When you first started going, you met primarily with inmates one-on-one?
Yes, yes. I met with men one-on-one, and then I met in little groups of classes. We had Bible studies together in classes, all volunteer. No one was ever forced to come to class.
And why do you think the men would come to those classes? Or did you work with women as well?
Both.
Okay. Why would the inmates come to those classes?
I believe, as one of the great fathers of the faith said, there's a spiritual vacuum in all people. It shows up in different ways. And I believe that there's a spiritual hunger in the heart of all men. That's the reason we have so many religions. They're hunting and seeking for something. They don't know exactly what it is.
How do you connect with an inmate? What approach do you take?
I approach, as I've already said, that I, by the grace of God, I'm not where you are. And I'm not throwing rocks at you or putting you down. I can identify, even though I have not done what you did, I can see by the grace of God, I'm not where you are. Therefore, I do not put myself on a higher level. I'm a child of God. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. And I would in no way try to imply that I'm better than you are. I try to identify with them in that approach.
Do you ask them about why they're there? Do you probe and try to understand what brought them to the prison in the first place?
I usually do not. If they want to share with me why they are in prison, I leave that up to them. I do not probe in that area. And as I get to know them better, they usually start sharing with me those things. But I do not usually probe for those information.
You've been doing this now for 15 years.
Yes.
What makes it worthwhile to you?
To see the blessings. My wife, when I leave home sometime, I'm tired and wore out, and I come back with a smile on my face, rejoicing. They are an uplift for me to just see what God is doing in their life. As we see when they come and have a right relation with Jesus Christ, I see a change in their life, a joy in their hearts. And that's always an encouragement for me, yes.
Without violating anyone's confidentiality, can you tell me the story of a connection that you made with an inmate that you feel really made a difference for them?
Yes, yes, yes. This inmate is now passed on. It's a lady. She's known far and wide, and some may be hearing it's familiar with the prison system would recognize her name that I will not use. She came to class a number of times, and she would always disrupt the class. I was warned ahead of time that she would disrupt the class, and she did. And she was transferred from the different ladies' facility, which is Oakdale and Mount Pleasant and Mitchellville, and she would run a rotation plan, and officers hated to have her. And one day she came back from Mitchellville and showed up at a class I was teaching with the ladies present. And when I asked them, I said, if any of you would like to simply follow Christ, just ask him to take over your life and forgive your sins and come into your life, a very non-conventional way. And she stood up and said she was going to do that. And I thought, my, she's pulling another trick on me. She's got something ulterior going on. But she did. A few days later, the officer in charge of that particular unit at Oakdale came into the chapel. He said, "What did you do to this lady?" I said, "I did not do anything of what she'd done." And he said, "She's changed." I said, "What you mean she's changed?" He said, "Well, she's not cussing me out like she was. She's not spitting in my face like she was." And I said, "Well, that's wonderful, isn't it?" And yes. Well, she went back to Mitchellville after that, and we began to receive word from different ladies that were coming from Mitchellville. What a change, because she was known far and wide in the prison system. She was getting out. She had been in prison the greater part of her life. And then at the Mitchellville facility, this is some years ago now, the word came out that shows our system works. Look how so-and-so has changed. She's going to be getting discharged. I arranged for a Christian lady in that area to show her some attention. And not church, not any particular church. She never did go to church, so I don't make church an issue. I make Christ the issue. And she wrote a statement about how Christ had changed her life and sent me a copy of it just before she passed on. That's the joy. That's the joy. Christ is the answer. Not religion. I don't call it religion. I call it a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I said, I wouldn't walk across the street to make you a Christian as we think of Christianity. Christ is the issue, not Christianity, not any other religion. Christ himself, as he's who he said he was, he's the answer to your problems, my problems, and every inmate's problems.
Ed Bateman, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. It's my privilege.
Ed Bateman is a retired pastor. He's now 81 years old, and he's been volunteering at the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale for 15 years. And next, I'm going to speak with an imam who also works within the system. Imam Taha Tawil works as the imam for the Mother Mosque of America, which is located in Cedar Rapids. He's worked within the correction systems now for 25 years. Hello, Imam Tawil.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you tell me how you first got involved with the prison system?
Well, I was the imam at the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids to begin with, and a lot of letters and phone calls start coming from inmates seeking help and asking for guidance. So I start initiating visits to Oakdale in the early 1985-86. And then we start having programs there. And by the year 88, I got an award from our governor, Terry Brandestand, who is our governor for now.
How large is the Muslim population in Iowa's prisons?
Well, it's growing, and we have over 300 to 400 inmates currently in the system.
And that's spread throughout the different facilities in Iowa?
That's correct.
So you must do quite a lot of traveling.
A lot.
How often do you visit each prison?
Well, I have a schedule. Each prison has different needs. But basically, there are visits every other week, sometimes once a month, sometimes every week. It depends on the needs and the situation in each prison, you know.
We've been talking this hour about the responsibility and requirements of the Department of Corrections to respect the religious preferences of inmates in prison and allow them to worship. Are there some particular problems that Muslim offenders face with having the opportunity to obey the call to prayer and that kind of thing?
No, thank God we are having our full freedom to practice our faith and to move on in our teaching. The only thing we face is the stereotype, the Islamophobia, that normal coming from the environment, media, and whatever happening, blaming Muslims for everything, that affect our operation, as they say, inside the prison system. When people look at you differently in a way. But the minute they start knowing that we are part of Iowa and we are part of the United States and we have the same right like any other person, and thank God also for the court systems where it keep us in line. And so the Muslim inmates also active, they know their rights and they know their duties at the same time.
Have you yourself faced discrimination within the prison system because of your faith?
No, I did not. I have been always respected, and I have been always doing the best I can to promote understanding, because the problem is ignorance. They don't know about the Muslim faith. They don't know about the Muslim traditions and the practices. And so when we speak to officers, when we speak to wardens in their meetings, they invite me to warden meetings, treatment directors meetings, security meetings, and that helps. That, you know, when I make a workshop and teach about the faith and the practices and the different segment of groups that they have inside the prison system, that make an eye-opener for them, and communication start building up after that.
I think that among the stereotypes, there are people who are concerned that there are people recruiting prisoners to the Muslim faith in an effort to breed terrorists. This is maybe a fringe opinion, but it's something that, that people have talked about. Have you dealt with people who are concerned about that?
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, this came not from the prison system, but from volunteer groups or those who work in the faith arena. There was a program in one of the correctional centers, and they were paid for that, and they start somehow bringing these rumors, because some other system, like in New York, California, they heard about some radical imams who did speak something bad, and it spread all around, so they pick it up, and I told them we are different in Iowa, you know. We believe in equality, justice, and we all are citizens. So that was dismissed in many ways. But it was from volunteers, from other religious group, and not from the Department of Correction.
What motivates you to keep doing this after 25 years?
Well, it is the spirit of God that teaches us to be positive and to have a purpose in life, that we're all going back to God, and it's a journey, a long journey. And so if you help someone to see the truth, if you help someone to adhere to Abrahamic tradition and bring back the teachings of Abraham, that there is only one God and there is a life after death, and that we have to live by peace and justice between all of us. That message affects people, and the success that we have is tremendous. And because of the reward that we are told about, I keep going. And that's basically the motivation.
We have just a moment left before our break. Can you tell me, without violating someone's confidence, something, a success story that you feel good about?
Many, many. I've seen a lot of inmates that I taught and touched graduated from universities now. They are having families, buying homes, working. And most of these successful stories help me to keep going again and again. They see the truth, the light, and they are moving on their own.
All right. Imam Taha Tawil, thank you so much for being here today.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Imam Tawil works as the Imam for the Mother Mosque of America, which is located in Cedar Rapids. He has worked with the correction system for more than 25 years now. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I'll also talk with a rabbi who has been working within the Department of Corrections and a Native American spiritual and cultural consultant for the Department of Corrections in a moment. And we'll get a personal story coming up as well. We have this personal story from Tom posted on our Facebook page. I was in the Interchange Freedom Initiative, a Christian prison program in Newton till it was shut down. Also mentored and taught classes. It helped me improve my self-esteem, worldview, and the ability to critically analyze my attitude and behavior. It improved my spirituality. We'll continue our conversation about spirituality in prison in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about spirituality in prison as we continue our series on corrections in Iowa. With me now is Rabbi Leib Bilel, who works in Des Moines. Hello, Rabbi Bilel.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me, you haven't been working with the correction system for very long, only about 6 months, and I know that the Jewish population in Iowa's prisons is quite small. But can you tell me a little bit about your experiences so far, about what it's like to be Jewish in Iowa's prisons?
Interesting question. Being Jewish in what I've been working with up until now, as you say, there is not a large Jewish concentration in Iowa correctional facilities. And the inmates that I have been working with are predominantly religious ones, which has intrigued other inmates who are Jewish that weren't practicing Jews to express an interest in, in terms of exploring more and seeing the religious sides of their religion.
So people who were perhaps born Jewish but had not been practicing the faith?
Yes, they were born Jewish, and the other ones I've been dealing with, they were actually practicing other religions, which has created an interesting situation, to my understanding. When inmates initially come into the prison system, they put down their religion, and to someone who's brought up in a certain religion, even if they're born to one parent that is Jewish, the fact that they were brought up in a certain religion would put down, for example, that they were Christian. But now that there is a small population of religious Jews in the system, they've been made aware now that even though that they've got one parent that is Jewish, they are religiously, from a religious point of view, they are deemed as Jewish. So they've expressed an interest into their religion, but the fact that they've put down a different religion when they came in has created challenges in terms of them being able to explore the Jewish side of their religion.
What is the challenge there?
The challenge is that the fact that they've put down a different religion as their religion, and now that they are learning that from a religious perspective, they are deemed a different religion according to that. Within the correctional institution, there is ongoing, the communication between clergy and the correctional institution in terms of them being able to have the rights of practicing and exploring their Jewish side.
Oh, interesting. So we need to move on to talk to other people yet this hour. But so far, you've only been involved for about 6 months. But what makes this experience worthwhile to you?
It's number one is Iowa as a state is always a friendly religious state. And seeing dialogue between and accessibility of them accommodating Jewish inmates has always been wonderful very accommodating. And for Jewish inmates over here, the fact that they're a small population has been able to give them the opportunity now in terms of being able to progress and carry on with their religious faith.
Well, Rabbi, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Rabbi Leib Bolel works in Des Moines. He is a rabbi for Beth El Jacob Synagogue, and he's also been working within the prison system for about 6 months. And now joining us is Judy Morrison. She is of Cherokee and Osage descent and is the Native American cultural and spiritual consultant to Iowa's Department of Corrections. Hello, Judy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
How long have you been involved with the prison system in Iowa?
I've been in this position for 11 years.
And when you moved into this position, what was being done to meet the spiritual needs of Native American inmates?
Well, we have had a consultant for the Department of Corrections for many years, but they had one for the eastern part of the state and one for the western part of the state. And when I was hired, they hired me for the entire state. So me taking the position was the first time they'd had a consultant for the entire state of Iowa.
With the Native American offenders who are in prisons, they are from different tribes and I would guess would have different spiritual practices. Is that a challenge for you?
It's not a challenge for me. It's for a challenge for the institutions and for the men and women. We have made the decision because almost every tribe, there's over 700 tribes in this country. There's over 560 that are federally recognized, but some of them have similar practices. So we have decided that a sweat lodge will be in each one of the institutions, and that's been there for many years. So the primary institutions all have sweat lodges, and that is their privilege then to participate within those sweat lodges on a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis?
Yes, it is.
And you conduct ceremonies in these sweat lodges?
I do for the women. And I do occasionally if the men request me to come in and pour water for them. But most often, the men and women both, they have leaders within their groups that pour water.
And what else do you do to help support these offenders culturally and spiritually?
Well, in my position, I am an advisor and a consultant and counselor to the men and women to help them with issues that they have while they're in our correctional system, as well as at home. If there's family issues, issues with their children, I work with them through the ICWA, which is the Indian Child Welfare Act, to maintain custody or regain custody, if that's appropriate. And I also am a consultant and an advisor to the staff so that there's no violations of their constitutional rights to practice their spirituality, to participate within it.
Have you needed to do a lot of education of staff? These are cultural and spiritual practices that many people don't know anything about.
There's been a great need and a continuing need because we hire new officers and staff on a regular basis, and most of them have no knowledge of our spiritual ways. So we have to make sure that our staff, as well as our offenders, have a very good information base so that there is no violation of the federal law. Our Native spirituality is protected by four federal laws, unlike other religions or other faith groups. We have the first one that's guaranteed to everyone, which is the Freedom of Religion Act. And then we have the Native American Freedom of Religion Act passed in the early 70s. And shortly thereafter, the Native American Prisoners Freedom of Religion Act. And then we have the Land Use Act, which guarantees us the right to use and participate in our ceremonies with product from our state and federal land.
Judy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome.
Judy Morrison is the Native American cultural and spiritual consultant to Iowa's Department of Corrections. And now we're going to turn to a woman with a personal story of her time serving in Iowa's correctional system. Kelly Abel is here with us. She was at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville for a year back in 2007. Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
How old were you when you went to prison?
45.
And when you went to prison, how would you have described your faith?
Not real good.
Okay. But did you identify with a religion when you went in?
I did. I was born into the Catholic religion, but my faith was not real strong. I always believed in God, but I've had such a hard time in life that I didn't truly believe he was there.
What changed for you in prison?
Knowing that God was really there. Understanding that before I went to prison, I asked God to take my hand and lead me in there. And if he could lead me inside those walls, that I would truly believe in him and I would follow his ways. And the day that I went in, I felt him grab my hand and he actually walked me inside those walls. It was very tough.
What did you see and experience as you entered prison that made you feel that God was on your side?
It's basically what I felt. I felt him there. I felt his spirit. I felt him telling me everything was going to be okay, that this was just a little bit of my time, and no matter what, I was going to be able to come out, and everything was going to be okay with me.
So it sounds like you had already made the decision on your own that faith was going to be a bigger part of your life as you entered prison. But what kind of support did you find at Mitchellville in the prison to help you on your spiritual journey?
Well, when I first got in there, there was kind of some churches in there. But like 2 months into it, they actually started Women at the Well. The first night they had it, I had a girlfriend say, let's just go to church and let's see what it's about. And, you know, it took her a couple of times to actually convince me to actually go.
And Women at the Well is a congregation within Mitchellville.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And so when you were convinced to go, what did you find?
I found a very wonderful place. It was so touching that it just literally every time I went to church, I cried and I cried and I cried. I really truly felt the presence of God inside those walls and that he was there with us and he was going to help us no matter what we did, no matter where we've been. God's there for you.
When you were in prison, you were recovering from a drug addiction and you, I'm guessing, also went through treatment programs to help you with that struggle.
That's correct. Yes, I did.
What do you play? What kind of role do you think that the time you spent with the congregation played in that treatment and your ability to overcome your addiction?
I think they helped supported me and let me know that, you know, the road that I was down wasn't the road that I needed to be on. My addiction was a very strong addiction. I was addicted to meth. And just going inside those walls and being inside the congregation and knowing that women are in there supporting each other and helping each other through whatever it was that got them in there was wonderful. The pastor at the time was Pastor Arnett Pine, and she was wonderful. She talked to you. She helped you through things. I was on the council for the church on the inside. We got to make decisions. She treated us like we were human beings and not just somebody that was in prison behind the walls.
For someone with your challenges, getting out of prison is a very dangerous time because it's easy to return to earlier habits. When you return to your hometown, How did you lean on the church? How did you lean on your faith to help you with that challenge?
Actually, I really didn't. We had a program started up inside the walls. It was called an aftercare program. I had applied for the aftercare program, but because I was actually going back to my own home, and there wasn't any aftercare set up in the town that I was living in, it was kind of hard to get me set up with an aftercare program. So basically, when I got out of prison, it was a fend for yourself type of thing. I just kept my faith in God and prayed to him and asked him to please make sure that, you know, the people that I had bad habits with would leave me alone. I would change my life. It didn't so much happen. I pretty much had to leave the area and move to another area. And then unfortunately, that area wasn't real good for me either. But I did get a hold of Pastor Arnett, and I went back to where I knew, you know, and she helped me. She got me out of the situation that I was in. I didn't do drugs when I got out, but I was in a situation where the person that I was with was doing drugs. And I just kept feeling that if I was going to be there, then I was going to go back down that road again. And I never wanted to go down that road again. So she helped me to relocate into Ames and helped me get into an aftercare program. And these people were with me for a good 2 years before I got out.
So really, the person that was your spiritual guide in prison also continued to guide you after prison and help you.
Oh, very much so.
Give you the strength to leave a difficult situation.
Yes. She is my angel. And she knows it. And I've told her she's my angel. She saved me. I didn't know what else to do. I did not have that prison to turn back to and say, hey, I need your help. She gave me everything I needed and got me somewhere safe.
Tell me about your life now.
My life is wonderful. I have a wonderful job. I work for KFC Taco Bell in Clear Lake, Iowa. I have two wonderful children. I have three wonderful grandchildren. I don't want for anything anymore. As soon as I gave God my life changed in so many different ways. It's fabulous. It's fabulous.
And what role does faith play in your life today?
Role is everything to me. It's a wake up call. It's an everyday thing. I wake up, I pray to God. I pray to God when things get low and when my job gets tough. And I pray to God when I go to sleep. I deal with the aftercare program and I'm a speaker for them. So I still have a lot to do with the prison industry. Faith is God is my father, and you know I have a father in this world, but he's my true father, and he watches over me and makes sure that I'm going to be safe. And he doesn't always help me when I need him, but because sometimes I feel like I'm asking for things that I really shouldn't be asking for, but when he truly needs you, he's there for you.
Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
Kelly Abel shared with us her story of her spiritual journey while at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville back when she was there in 2007, and how that has guided her after she left prison to become very successful in life. We'll continue our series on corrections in Iowa today on River to River at noon. We're going to talk today about the staffing levels of Iowa's prisons. We'll talk with two individuals who work in an Iowa prison and host a discussion on whether the state's correctional facilities are appropriately staffed. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This is Talk of Iowa.